Ms. Cassetta, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Caitlin Cassetta, and I'm here today on behalf of the petitioner, Jackson Hospital Corporation, doing business as Kentucky River Medical Center. May I please reserve 1 minute for rebuttal? Thank you. Today, the hospital requests that this court grant its petition for review and either remand this case to the board so that it may consider evidence of the favorable treatment of Ms. Combs presented by the hospital, or alternatively find that the board's order is not supported by substantial evidence based on the record as a whole. First, the hospital asks for remand due to the fact that the board failed to consider evidence of the hospital's favorable treatment of Ms. Combs. During the hearing before Administrative Law Judge Buxbaum, the hospital presented evidence of two occasions upon which Ms. Combs was treated favorably by the hospital, and specifically...
But that's before she became an activist, so to speak, right before she was on the bargaining committee and...
Your Honor, it's correct that those two events did occur in 2005 prior to Ms. Combs joining the bargaining committee. However, her status as a union activist persevered from the time before she joined the bargaining committee. In fact, the board in its answering brief points to the pivotal factor in this case in terms of animus being the fact that Ms. Combs was indeed a union activist, not the fact that she had joined the bargaining committee. Her support for the union throughout her tenure at the hospital was unwavering, and at joining the bargaining committee did not provide her with any additional ability to advocate for the union within the hospital that she did not have previously. This court in NLRB v. Bill and Shoe Company held that a decision of this type requires that the board look to all the evidence rather than put together bits and pieces of evidence that support a finding that would be unfavorable to the employer, which is what has occurred here. And based on these facts, this case should be remanded to the board because under Rightline, the general counsel had the burden of showing animus, and the board clearly ignored evidence here of favorable treatment, which would combat a finding of animus. Therefore, the hospital asked that this case be remanded.
Well, how about animus coming from the fact that she's been in limbo? I don't know if she still is, but was in limbo for over a year and a half, and that was unprecedented itself, wasn't it?
Your Honor, you are correct that the length of Ms. Combs' suspension is unusual. However, I would point out that under the hospital's policy, a supervisory or an investigatory suspension can last for an indefinite period of time. And the reason in this case for the length of the suspension is based upon the fact that the union has failed to schedule a meeting with the hospital to discuss the terms of the suspension, as was required by the contract created by the two parties by way of the letters exchanged.
That's the part of the case I find most difficult, which is why hasn't there been a meeting?
Your Honor, there simply hasn't been a meeting because the union has failed to request one since twice canceling the meetings that were scheduled.
When were those two meetings scheduled, do you recall?
They were scheduled for the summer of 2007, I believe, in conjunction.
And this happened in January of 2007?
Yes, you're correct.
Okay. And there's nothing else we know about that other than both sides since then, for 4 years, I guess, have refused to take the first step.
Well, Your Honor, the hospital did, by letter to Mr. Pidcock, who is the union representative, state that they would not take any further action on Ms. Combs' suspension until the point in time when the union was afforded an opportunity to meet with the hospital. The hospital agreed to two scheduled meetings, and the union canceled both of those, which, yes, leaves the case to some extent.
So from your perspective, there was an opportunity to meet at which this would have been resolved. I'm not even sure what needs to be resolved, by the way, but that's a separate problem. And the union didn't participate in either meeting, or canceled both meetings.
Yes, you're correct, Your Honor.
And what would be the point of the meeting other than to say, by the way, the original meeting with Ms. Combs was simply to tell her that she was receiving oral discipline and she wasn't entitled to bring a representative?
Well, the meetings that would have occurred between Combs, Pidcock, and Renfro would presumably have discussed that, as well as fulfilled the hospital's obligation to fully and fairly investigate the case.
What was being investigated?
If I could point you to the hospital's policy, which is in the appendix at page A153, the policy states that an investigatory suspension can be used to gather additional evidence, but it can also be used for management review of a case. In this case, that review would have been review of the case by the CEO of the hospital.
Would that be review of the underlying case about how the medication was administered?
No, Your Honor. I believe all the parties are in agreement that that verbal warning was proper.
So it's
proper.
A review of the meeting. This whole thing strikes me as a bizarre situation. I'll just put that out there, and I'm going to say that to the other side, too, to the board.
Your Honor, the fact that the suspension has gone on is admittedly unusual for the hospital. However, it is in line with hospital policy and was within the rights of the hospital in terms of their obligations under the contract created by the letters, as well as their obligations to conduct favorable labor relations with the union. Had they refused to meet with the union or went ahead with making a decision on Ms. Combs' suspension prior to meeting with the union, they would have been liable to Section 301 violation under the Labor Management Relations
Isn't
Act.
Isn't there a difference between refusing to meet with the union and giving them an opportunity which the union doesn't take advantage of? It seems strange to me that the hospital, which even though you can have an indefinite suspension for investigation, that's really bounded by the fact that it's only indefinite, that is to say, it's only available to you for as long as it takes to do whatever investigation is necessary. So why wouldn't the hospital have met its obligation by simply providing the opportunity?
Well, they may have met their obligation by providing the opportunity if they had not specifically stated in the letter written by Mr. Renfro that they would take no further action until a meeting had been held, which is different than just simply providing an opportunity. So that obligation was not vitiated by virtue of simply providing the opportunity, which the hospital did do. It made itself available, as I've said, on two occasions at least to meet with the union.
So if today the union said we want to meet, the hospital would meet?
Yes, Your Honor. Absolutely. The hospital is ready and willing to meet to discuss the suspension.
But then doesn't the hospital put itself in the position of having to provide back pay to an employee who hasn't worked for 4 years?
Yes, Your Honor, there is that possibility, but it's more important to the hospital to maintain the contract created by the letters. There's also potential liability, as I've stated, under Section 301, were they to not comply with it. So in essence, the hospital is, to some extent, between a rock and a hard place.
Well, you keep saying that, I'm sorry,
you go
ahead. Contract, you know, created by the letter. But that's a really big assumption, that this letter represents any kind of contract.
The exchange of letters between the two parties clearly evinces a meeting of the minds in terms of what the next step was to be concerning Ms. Combs' suspension. Mr. Pidcock asks in no uncertain terms for a meeting before any action is taken. Mr. Renfro responds that he will take no action until the hospital has met with the union and Ms. Combs. In terms of, on a basic level, the creation of contract, that burden was met. Additionally, if you look to Retail Clerks International Association versus Lion Dry Goods, that case states, and that's out of the Sixth Circuit, that it's enough that the contract be created with, in terms of an attempt to foster labor peace, which is the intent of the hospital here.
So suppose the union and the hospital met today, and the hospital says, by the way, the purpose of this original meeting was to inform her of oral discipline and to put her, and she refused to meet, and therefore we suspended her, and she would be part of this meeting. So we're telling you now that that's your oral discipline and you can come back to work. Would the hospital have to pay back pay?
Your Honor, I'm not sure of, candidly, the answer regarding back pay to that question, but I would say that the meeting is still necessary in terms of hearing from the union and Ms. Combs as to any additional information that needs to be provided before the investigation can be closed.
Okay.
But the investigation is only on this Weingarten issue, isn't it? I mean, what information is she going to provide? In fact, it would come from the employer, because the employer's whole position of why she wasn't entitled to union representation was they'd already made the decision, they were simply announcing the decision. So what other information could she give? She's on the receiving end.
I see that my time has expired. May I briefly answer your question and conclude?
Yeah, if you would, please.
In terms of the information that she could provide, the hospital wouldn't speculate to that, but the fact that a meeting was requested and, in fact, insisted upon by Mr. Pidcock would speak to the fact that he and Ms. Combs felt there was indeed information for her to share. For the reasons that I've stated, the hospital asks that you please grant their petition for review and either remand this case to the board or find that the order is unenforceable because it's not supported by substantial evidence.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Kelly Isbell here on behalf of the National Labor Relations Board. The board found, based on the circumstances surrounding the hospital suspension of Lynn Combs and the false and pretextual explanations it gave for that suspension, that the suspension was unlawfully motivated. First, the board looked at the meeting before the meeting with Combs, where Linkus announced to two other hospital officials that if Combs refused to meet with them, she would suspend her indefinitely, despite the fact that no employee in the past 10 years had...
So all Combs had to do was show up at the meeting, and there would have been no suspension.
If she had shown up...
By herself at the meeting, there would have been no suspension.
Unless she had asked for a Weingarten representative, then we'd still be in the same situation. If she had
entitled...
She was not entitled.
She was told.
She was told no. She was never. They never explained to her why.
They told. You answered a different question than I asked. She was told she was not entitled to have someone there.
When she asked if she could have a representative, Linkus said no.
Exactly.
She asked why, and Linkus didn't explain why. Repeated whys, and Linkus didn't explain why, but Linkus knew.
Just on the original point, rhetorical point you made, Combs, none of this would have happened if she participated in the meeting by herself. Would have been a 60-second meeting 4 years ago.
That is perhaps true, Your Honor. But that's not.
So I don't understand the relevance of the pre-meeting conversation, because if she, unless they were certain she was going to refuse to participate, who cares what they said before the meeting? If she shows up by herself and participates, takes 30 seconds to say, here's your oral discipline for the medication issue, oral reprimand or whatever it was called, and then it's over.
The board found that the sequence of events showed that the hospital was trying to set her up. They knew she was going to come with someone. They knew she was going to, she always did. Linkus testified. She always comes with someone. I know.
And so they tell her you're not entitled to,
And she asks why, and they don't tell her why. There's a hospital policy that says she can't have.
So after the meeting, she knows that she's going to be suspended. Why doesn't she ask someone, am I entitled to someone at this meeting?
Why doesn't she ask someone else?
Yeah, and someone will say, no, you're not. So if you want your job back, you better go meet with them alone. I just don't get this case. It's the same problem I had.
Well, the board agrees with you that the facts of this case are, in your words, it just doesn't add up. But if she...
But I think it doesn't add up on Combs' side either. Well, I don't understand her behavior at all.
The hospital suspended her. And when she left that meeting, she said to them, if I'm right, will I get back pay? And they said yes. So she left the meeting believing that they were going to investigate whether or not she had a right. She was wrong. She did not have a Weingarten right.
She could have figured out she was wrong in about 5 minutes after the meeting by asking someone.
I'm sorry.
By asking someone.
But the hospital suspended her. And the hospital said it was going to investigate, and it never investigated, and it has never been in contact with her.
The union then, okay, let's get to the subsequent part, which still confuses me. The union then has two meetings scheduled
in conjunction with negotiations.
Right, where this is one of the topics, and both meetings are canceled. Whose fault is that when the union canceled the meetings?
Well, the union canceled the meetings because of, I believe, the illness of one of the bargaining committee members.
The person's still ill?
That, Your Honor, I don't know the answer to.
Well, it just is absurd. The whole thing's absurd.
It is. And why didn't Pidcock, whatever his name is, say to her, since he has an obligation to protect her interests, look, all you have to do is go into the meeting and listen to what they have to say and walk out again. you don't have a right to have someone there.
And for all I know, that's what happened. I mean, this is not a duty of fair representation case. This is an unfair labor practice case. Mm-hmm. So if the union has neglected its duty to her, that's a different issue. Here, the hospital was the entity that suspended her. The hospital never got back in touch with her. The hospital knew when it suspended her, there was nothing to investigate. The officials in that room knew she didn't have a Weingarten right. She has been suspended now for more than 4 years.
That's okay. I don't know whose fault that is, but I'm repeating myself.
The letters
could have been over in 30 minutes.
It could have been over in 30 minutes. I agree. The letters between the union and the CEO of the hospital, all the union asked for was the opportunity to meet. All the hospital promised was the opportunity to meet. The hospital never said in that letter.
Why does the union write a letter to the hospital saying Ms. Combs is prepared to meet alone to receive her oral discipline?
I'm not sure. But the meeting was not the meeting that has been arranged.
Like the union's not exactly doing right by her either.
That is perhaps true. But in this particular case, the board no charges were filed against the union, so the board's not reviewing the union's conduct in this case. The board can only review the charges brought to it. So it's only reviewing the charges brought against the hospital at this point. Okay.
Any more questions? All right. Thank you. Does Ms. Cassetta have any time left? All right. Why don't you take 1 minute?
Thank you. Your Honors, very briefly, counsel for the respondent stated that the union's neglected duty to Ms. Combs was a different issue, but respectfully, Your Honors, it plays right into the issue at hand, which is the board's attribution of animus to the hospital in this case, when in reality, Your Honors have seen and perhaps commented that some of the animus that was attributed to the hospital in this case is really the failing of the union to properly represent their member. And for that reason, this case merits either remand or a finding that the board's order is not supported by the substantial evidence. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.